Hi, this is a His Beloved Catholic podcast. We are so glad you're with us. We have a heart for drawing people, you, into the heart of the Father and His deep, immense love over you.
So we are two best friends who live across the street, and we have this podcast because we feel like the Lord is calling us, this entire Catholic Church, to revival. So you are here for our Advent series, and this is on the names of Jesus. And we just felt the Lord saying He wants to draw into deep intimacy during Advent so that on Christmas morning, you can run into His arms, knowing Him deeply, knowing His heart for you, getting rid of pain and shame and heartache, receiving healing and freedom from chains, and just get to celebrate the Christmas season with Him. Mm-hmm. We are so excited that you are here. There is a study that goes along with this. If you would like to purchase it, it's on our website, hisbelovedoftexas.com, and you can find that in the show notes. But more than anything, we just want you to let the Lord speak His love over you today.
Yeah. Come along for the ride.
Hello, friends. Welcome back. This is our episode on Jesus as the bread of life. Yeah. Hi, Kendra.
Hello.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good. Man, we're just sitting over here talking about the Lord. I'm like getting all hyped up.
Yeah, I know.
So me too. For this.
Me too. I'm super excited. And to talk about, you know, the Eucharist. Yes, please.
Let's do it. I agree.
Yeah.
So, all right. Jesus as the bread of life. Like that is who we are as Catholics. It is what makes us different. Mm-hmm. It's what sets us apart. It should be what keeps us Catholic.
Yeah.
Even when the rest of the world feels crazy, even when issues arise in this church and we know that there's brokenness here, mm-hmm. you can't leave Jesus in the Eucharist.
Human faults,
but that is not Him, right? That is not who He is.
Right.
And man, it's so fun. And I still can't stop thinking about this Pew Research study that says only a third of Catholics believe that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. I always wonder if those are like a third of the people who actually come to Mass on Sunday. Or the people who were like raised Catholic and have fallen away? Like who do they?
Yeah, I don't know. Damascus actually on their recent podcast, and I don't remember what they said much. but
good job.
Yeah, thanks. That's what I bring to the podcast, y'all. But if it's because the Lord wants them to go listen to this episode, Beyond Damascus. It's really good. It's about prophecy in Christianity. But he was talking about Pew Research study and how they did a follow-up study regarding it. And it's not as bleak.
And we don't know what the answer was?
No, I don't remember. But it's not as bleak, but it's not great.
I can't imagine it would be people who are actually coming every week. Like, I really hope that's not the case.
Right.
I really hope that's not the case. But even for the people who are like dedicated, devoted, church-going Sunday Catholics, I would say for the most part, people really don't understand.
Yeah.
Some do, and that's amazing. But I think there's so much more we can do in sharing with people who God is and why Jesus gave us Himself in the Eucharist.
Yeah.
And why that matters so much.
I think it was in the Damascus podcast where he said it's like receiving a nuclear bomb of grace.
Ooh, I like
right?
that.
Right, I know. Like we are privileged to be able to go to Mass every day.
Yeah.
And receive a nuclear bomb of grace. Like, yes, please.
Yeah, I know. And we could do a whole podcast series on the Mass and the parts of the Mass and how it all ties into biblical things and what's going on in the Mass and all of those things. And it is remarkable and amazing. And I always think if we actually saw what was happening on the altar and what was really happening, our brains would not be able to comprehend. Like we would not be able to, we wouldn't be able to fathom what's actually happening in the spiritual realm while we are there. But our hearts don't always feel all that. We don't always notice all that. And sometimes we get caught in going through the motions. So one of our big things with this study, this Advent, was that we really wanted people to understand the heart of God. Mm-hmm. Kendra and I were just talking about, we've had some conversations with people lately who it's really hard to understand who God is. It's hard to understand how good He is, how much He loves us. And then we want to take what we've learned about God and we want to bring that back to Jesus in the Mass. And in that encounter that we have with Him there. And I just keep like imagining this group of people who've been on this journey with us going to Mass and like having their hair blown back by the Lord. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I just got a cartoon image of that. Yes, in my head.
Like just feeling like, oh my goodness, this is Jesus who I've been encountering every morning. Now here he is right in front of me.
Right.
And I get to receive him into my body. Like, what a powerful thing. And as I was praying this morning, the Lord kind of put something on my heart of like, this is the only religion, at least I'm saying this very emphatically, like I know the answer to this and I'm probably wrong. The only religion where you get to sit face to face with your God.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah, that's powerful.
Where we get to be in the same room with him.
Right. Yeah.
He's not some far off distant God.
Right.
He's not some, you know, ancient deity that, you know, no one's ever seen or heard
or
touched.
Yeah.
He lived incarnately. Mm-hmm. So people have seen him, they have known him, and then he gave himself to us so that we could not miss a single day without him.
Right.
In the Eucharist.
And for our sake, but also for him, like he wants to be united with us.
Yes.
Every day.
He desires that.
Yeah.
That's all he desires. I always tell my kids, like when they're like mad that we have to go to church, like Jesus is so happy you're here.
Yeah.
Like he just, there's a party going on in heaven when you walk in the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is so excited you are here today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's so many different like ways and places we could go with this, but let's start with John 6.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I love John 6.
I know.
It's one of my favorites.
Okay. What's your favorite part of John 6?
Yes. Okay. So, I believe that God is beyond coincidences. Mm-hmm, and so totally. The fact that John 6 verse 66, scripturally is whenever the disciples, his followers who were there, this is after he said, eat my flesh, drink my blood, and you will have life everlasting. Some of them turned and walked away.
Yeah. And they even
that
said,
is John chapter 6, verse 66.
And they even said, this is a hard teaching
I
that
can't
we can't receive.
Right.
Like, this is outside of what we can understand.
Yes. Yes. And then his response to that, he let them go. Yeah. Like he didn't say, wait, no. I was just kidding. I don't mean real flesh, guys. Come on. No, he was like, okay.
No.
Yeah.
And you have to understand from a Jewish context too, blood and flesh were not to be touched. They were not like that made you unclean.
Right. Yeah.
So they didn't touch people's blood.
Right.
They didn't even always care for people when they were hurt or sick.
Right. I mean, a great depiction of that is in the Chosen series with the hemorrhaging woman.
Yes.
And how her life was completely,
she was ostracized.
Yeah. Yeah. And they depict it so beautifully, how, you know, how society treated her, how that affected her and all of that stuff.
Yeah. For 12 years,
blood. Yeah.
Her family disowned her. She was not allowed to go around other people because blood was made you unclean. And if you were unclean, you couldn't go into the temple, which is so interesting because the temple was a blood sacrifice. So there
that
was like blood everywhere.
Right.
All over the place.
I know. I was reading, I don't remember which book in the Old Testament, but it goes through like the dimensions of the altar and the temple and the curtains and all the things. And then it talks about blood splattering everywhere.
Yes,
like, oh
like
my gosh.
Blood all over the place.
All over the place.
But that was the atonement, was the blood of these animals, right? Mm-hmm. And so then that blood sacrifice led into the sacrifice that was once and for all.
Yeah.
And Jesus was a blood sacrifice for our hearts and for our lives. And so at Mass, the fact that we receive his blood, again, not a coincidence, like those things were intentional on the part of God, the Father, in order to, for once and for all, take away that need for atonement that blood sacrifice would have done in the past. Yeah. But so when they said that to them, especially eating the flesh, I mean, even now, if someone said, you have to eat my flesh or you don't have life within you.
No, thanks.
Like, that's a weird thing to say.
Right. Yeah.
And again, we're so used to hearing some of these things that it loses some of its power in our hearts.
But in the scriptural word that he used meant to gnaw on his flesh, not suck on it, not, you know,
take a nibble.
Ponder like, how yummy it tastes or whatever.
No.
Like you gnaw on his flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just before this is when Jesus has fed the 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
So he's already showed them like this miracle of bread.
Yeah.
He's taken these, you know, two loaves and five fish, five loaves and two, whatever. I think I said that backwards.
I always get those mixed up. Yeah.
And fed 5,000 with baskets overflowing afterwards. And you have to understand like the importance of bread to these people as well. Like there was this long history of the manna from heaven and the bread at the Passover feast. Like there were these this long history of bread being an integral part of the faith and a part of the way that God loved people and then God showed his provision for people. And so he is now saying like, I am that manna. And again, these are blasphemous words. He's saying your ancestors, the only way they could live was on that bread from heaven that came every single day. And they weren't allowed to store up this bread. Yeah. They couldn't like keep it. They tried.
That would have been me. I would have been like hoarding it, you know, throwing elbows at people. Right. I mean, my manna.
Well, even like every mom, kids. Right? We're going to save it till tomorrow so my kid has food.
Yeah.
No, it spoiled and it went rotten. And the Lord was like, you need to trust me. I told you I'd feed you every day. And I'm going to feed you every day. You don't need to try to feed yourself tomorrow. And so when he starts saying, your ancestors had manna and now you have me, I want to feed you every day. Like those are really, really powerful statements. And he doesn't make any reference to it being a parable of some kind or, you know, an analogy of some kind.
Yeah.
He's saying, I am the bread that has come down from heaven.
Yeah.
And there's so much depth in John 6 and why it's all written the way it is. And you can go back and research some more of that too, if that's interesting to you. But I love John 6. I mean, it is so often when we have conversations with Protestants, they say, where is that in the Bible? This is in the Bible. 100% truly it is in the Bible.
And later on in the New Testament, I forget which disciple. I'm great at memory,
you're
guys.
You're good today,
girl. I'm batting a thousand. I forget which disciple was talking about this, but, was just giving instructions to them to be sure they're receiving, in a place of worthiness, right? Like, not living in sin and that sort of thing. And if it was just a symbol, then why would he need to give that sort of instruction?
Yeah. Why you would know that what I mean? Matter?
Yeah. Why would it matter?
Yeah. Well, and also have you ever read the writings of St. Justin Martyr? Oh, he's so fun. So he is like, first century, second century. Yeah. I think he's like around like the 60s or 70s AD. So direct descendant of the disciples.
Yeah.
Like he was trained by the disciples. And I was just reading about his description of the mass. It's like the exact same thing we have now. Even down to like the kiss of peace and the bread and the wine and it's gone all the way back.
Yeah.
This is not some newfound thing that was put in place later on.
Right.
And even the institution of the Eucharist being Jesus, like the knowledge that Jesus is truly present, body, blood, soul, and divinity, that didn't change for hundreds and hundreds of years. Even when Martin Luther pulled away from the church, he still believed that Jesus is present in the Eucharist. He truly believed that. It wasn't until after him that that was taken away. And so the historical context, the scriptural context, like it is all there for his, you know, true presence in the Eucharist. And then the other thing I was thinking about this morning is like, there's no other religion that I can think of anyways that has like scientific backup too.
Yeah.
Of like what we say is true.
Yeah.
We can also show you like DNA evidence of what we say is true.
And the Eucharistic miracles.
And the Eucharistic miracles. Yeah. And that is so cool.
And there's a couple of saints that lived on only the Eucharist.
Oh,
that's all goodness. They ate. All they ate.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and you have like Blessed Imelda who died after she received the Eucharist. We used to always tell that story to the kids and then they would get scared.
A first communion, I know.
you won't die after you receive first communion. And if you do, it'll be a lovely experience. I'm sorry about that. We scared you half to death. But yeah, there's some like amazing stories. One of my favorites is the story of John Paul II coming to America. And I think he was in Boston and he was going into a church. And so they had their like secret service, like sweep it, whatever they call those guys, you know, had him sweep the building and make sure there was nothing in there that could hurt him. And they brought in a, like, basically like cadaver dog, you know, like that looks for human bodies and looks for, you know, bombs or whatever else, but he's trained to find human bodies. And he walks up to the tabernacle and alerts on the tabernacle and will not leave.
That's amazing.
Will they cannot get him away from the tabernacle.
Yeah.
He just sits there and is like, you guys, there's a human being right there. Like there's a, and there's no one else in the building.
Yeah.
It's just him and Jesus. Like, and he will not leave because he senses the presence of human life.
That's amazing.
In this gold box.
Yeah.
So it's like things like that just like blow my mind. So if you ever start doubting his presence in the Eucharist, go and read Eucharistic Miracles.
Yeah.
My favorite is the one from, there's so many. I mean, my goodness, they're amazing. And kids love these stories. If you're not sharing the stories of Eucharistic Miracles with your children, you need to start now. But there's, my favorite story is the one from Argentina. And you've probably heard this story before, but it's okay. We're going to tell it again. And in Argentina, this was not that long ago. It was 1997. And there was a host that fell to the ground. And there's like two things you can do in that situation. You can either just consume it, or this had been quite a while though. Like they found it in the back of the church. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't, you know, I guess didn't feel called to consume it at that point. And so you can also put it in a glass of water and let it dissolve and then pour it back into the earth. It's like kind of like a burial mm-hmm. kind of format. And they put it in water and it didn't disintegrate. And then time went by. They let like 2 or 3 weeks pass and they go back and they look in the glass and it has turned into a piece of flesh. Mm. Like blood has formed. And of course they're shocked. They don't know what to, you know, they're amazed. And it had been like in a tabernacle with the door closed. And so they weren't really, looking at it. And they call the cardinal, and the cardinal was Jorge Bergoglio, which is Pope Francis. And they do all this scientific study on it and they send it to a lab in California. And they do not tell the lab where it came from. They do not say anything about it being part of a Catholic church. They just send this, you know, specimen mm-hmm. of flesh to the lab. And so it's reviewed by a man who was an atheist and did not believe in God. And he does all the research on it. And he finds that it is in fact a piece of human tissue and that it is the blood type AB. And that not only is it a piece of human tissue, but it's a piece of cardiac mm-hmm. muscle. So the heart, mm-hmm. it is the heart of a human. And they do this like special forensic testing on it that shows that this person died a brutal death mm-hmm. Of beating. And because I guess whenever that happens, the body releases like a hormone. And so they were able to detect that hormone in this piece of flesh. So, and they also determined that it was a man of Middle Eastern descent. Okay.
Hello, people.
So not only is this truly Jesus, mm-hmm. but it's his heart.
Yeah.
And after I first heard that it was his cardiac muscle, all I could think of is like, we get to not only receive him, we receive his sacred heart mm-hmm. every time we go to Mass. And every time we get to adore him in adoration, it's his heart that our eyes are locked in on. Mm-hmm. It's his heart that is speaking to our hearts and it's his heart that he offers to us. Mm-hmm. There was, when I read the Diary of St. Faustina, I always tell this little kids, I think they think I'm crazy every time I say this, but it's fine, whatever. It still matters to me. I'm not sure anybody else thinks it's cool, but I do. When I read the Diary of St. Faustina, you know, she had this, you know, amazing connection with the Lord and he would show up for her all the time and she would see him and he would speak to her. And there was one time she was at Mass and the priest lifted up the host. And instead of seeing the host, what she saw was baby Jesus in the priest's hands. And you know how when a baby sees his mommy or daddy, he like opens and closes his hands mm-hmm. like, mama, mama. So he was doing that to her.
Oh.
In, you know, as she's praying, he was looking right at her saying like, come here, like, I love you. And I just always think that's like the sweetest moment of like connection with Jesus in the Eucharist to his people that he loves.
Yeah.
So then what's really even cooler about this story is there's also the Eucharistic miracle of Lanciano, Italy. And I always get the dates wrong on this, but I should have looked it up, but it was in the year 700, I believe, which is a lot earlier than 1977. And it's basically the same story. They, put a, you know, a host into a glass of water and let it sit. And it also turned into a piece of flesh. Now, what's really interesting about this one though, is they did not preserve it in any way.
Wow.
They didn't even have it in like, they just had it in distilled water. It was not in any type of good preservation. It is still there. You can still go see this piece of, it has not disintegrated. It has not, you know, broken down in any way. And then after the, after like back in the 70s, I think it was before Argentina, but in the 70s, they did studies on it as well. Mm-hmm. And they also found that it was a AB blood mm-hmm. and it was a man. They didn't have all of the detailed studies because science yeah. hadn't caught up yet.
Right. Yeah.
But the two substances matched.
Wow.
Which is really remarkable. I mean, yeah. just to think about the fact that it lasted that long
yeah.
and then they were able to match. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's mind blowing. And there are countless stories like that. I think there was one recently. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
In America yeah. somewhere that yeah. they also put it into a glass and then it turned to blood. Like that recently yeah. happened. So who knows? We may yeah. be in the midst of
another miracle.
Our very own Eucharistic miracle right before yeah. our eyes.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a beautiful Eucharistic miraculous movement happening across our nation, you know, just totally. Happening with the Eucharistic Congress and the Lord is, I mean, if you don't respond to the miracles, he's still going, like he's still giving us more
yeah.
Through our priests, through our bishops and leading us to the heart of the Father through the Eucharist.
Do you think sometimes right he's like, you guys, what more do you want from me? Like what I've sure. already showed you. Come on, like pay I'm attention.
Sure. Yeah.
No, I'm really sure proud of our, I'm really proud of the way this Eucharistic miracle, what am I trying to say? Eucharistic revival, mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say, has unfolded and yeah. the way that it really feels like every diocese has gotten on board with it.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that amazing things are going to come out of this. Like the Lord is preparing us for something great.
Yeah.
Because he desires us to know him in the Eucharist.
Yeah.
He really, really does. And I'm excited to see where he goes with it after that.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything you want to share about the Eucharist or should I tell the Passover story?
I don't know. I just love the Eucharist. I love Jesus. I love receiving him. There was a season he's worth fighting for is what I'll say.
That's good.
Going to mass is worth fighting for. It's hard. There was a season when I don't remember, I have 6 kids, 15 to or 16 to
ooh, 16.
5 now. But so I'm kind of like climbing out of the trenches a bit cause I've, you know, it's just gotten a little easier. But in the thick of the trenches with the littles and all them home and everything, I don't know what it was, but just a grace. Like I was like, I'm going to go to mass every day and taking all the kids. We did it 2 weeks and it was like the most powerful 2 weeks of my life as far as my heart and connection
every
with the
day
Lord
for 2 weeks.
And every day for 2 weeks yeah. with the kids. And so he's worth fighting for,
yeah.
you know, it's not an inconvenience. And I've realized recently, you know, In the crazy of life, I would kind of get in this place of like, well, I don't have downtime. I don't have quiet time. So I'm going to, you know, not go to mass or whatever, cause that would just be one more thing I have to do. But, I'm come to see that, you know, like I go there, I give him my time and my heart and that is my rest. That
yeah.
is my place of rest. Mm-hmm. So he's life giving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I went, I guess it was not last Easter, but the one before that. I had been doing something all of Lent. I can't remember. Oh, we did that 90 thing.
Yeah.
It was that year.
Exodus 90?
Beyond 90.
Beyond 90, one of those things. Yeah.
Something with 90 in the name.
Yeah.
And it was the end of that. And I was feeling kind of like yeah. I hadn't really done much for Lent, which is silly because I think I'd done a lot, but whatever. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go to Mass during Holy Week. I'm going to go mm-hmm. every day. And I took Tessa with me and she was probably 18 months old at the time. She mm-hmm. wasn't very old, maybe almost 2. And she was not great at mass back then. Like
yeah.
she really wasn't. And, I really enjoyed it the first couple of days. And then the Lord invited me during that time period to start receiving him on the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I've kind of gone through this like process of receiving on the hand to now receiving kneeling on the tongue,
mm-hmm.
And it started from that time period. And I started going to daily mass every day and I was just really feeling like the power of the Lord in the mass. And Tessa was so sweet. And then I got to Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And I was like, well, I don't want this to be over. And he was like, it's okay. You can keep coming. And so I did.
Yeah.
And so I went I think it was like 15 or 16 days straight, something yeah. like that. And it was such a powerful time in my life. And it really, opened my eyes to the Eucharist, and I had all these amazing moments of like, I'd receive him on the tongue. And like one time, this is when we were at camp, I received him on the tongue and like my whole body felt like it was like heat all over my body. Yeah. And I was just crying my eyes out. Like this just like heat washed over me, but it was like the heat of his body is like what I felt.
Wow.
Which was really powerful. Yeah. And just all these moments of something about receiving on the tongue made it so much more, personal maybe, of this like relationship of him to me, instead of like him being handed and put in my hand, like all of a sudden it was like there was more honor, more authority, more, you know, kingly nature to it. But, it just really imprinted into my heart of like who he was and what I was receiving.
Yeah.
It was really, really powerful. And then after that, I got to the point where I was like, I can't receive standing. Like this just doesn't make sense. If he is our king, then I need to be on my knees. Mm. And a couple of the churches around here have started putting kneelers back out.
Yeah.
Which is glorious, I tell you.
Yeah.
Like if we want people to think that we believe that our king is present in this church, kneeling is a great way. Like my goodness, like you would kneel if your king was present, right? Like to kneel to receive him is so powerful. And you know, it's funny the things that like get stuck in your head of like fears and worries, because I was really fearful of receiving on the tongue for a while. I just honestly, it just kind of creeped me out. I didn't know what to do with it and it freaked me out. But
do you
also
want to actually bite a finger?
Right. I want to lick somebody's finger.
I know.
Oh, one time I was extraordinary minister, and I was offering, you know, I was giving the Eucharist to someone on the tongue, and it somehow like the host flew out of my hand, and it was like this traumatic experience, and it really messed with me for a while. I've since moved past it. Now I'm like, I don't care if I lick your finger, it's fine. But there was another time when I had just become Catholic that someone said, this was like somebody who had some authority in the church. She was teaching us how to receive the Eucharist as new Catholics. And she said, now don't get down on your knees and freak people out. They're going to think you're like passing out or something. And it's funny how like the enemy takes things like that.
Yeah.
Or the other thing she said, either you're doing it to look cool or like look holy, or you're going to scare people and they're going to think you're like passing out.
Yeah.
But that implanted in my brain.
Yeah.
And it's funny the way that the enemy does that.
Oh, for sure.
But now I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah. That's where I'm at too. That was my journey with veiling too. Just recognizing, his presence, his true presence. And he was asking me to veil. And my whole thing was like, what are they going to think of me? Like the enemy is going to turn it back on us.
Right.
Right. Make us think about us. And
anytime it's about us, then that's not of God.
Like, right. Yeah.
That's humility or pride. Yeah. One of the two. Pride that whatever.
Right. Yeah. So like, again, he's worth fighting for.
He is.
He was stripped naked.
Yeah.
And crucified so that we can receive him.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
If somebody is listening to this and they're like, I don't know how to connect to the Lord in Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to deepen their Mass experience. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for them?
Stop trying to do it on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop trying to make things happen. Stop trying to make feelings come up. Just receive.
Well, I don't even mean make feelings. I mean, like, they don't even know that he's present. Like, they're at that point where they're like, I'm just going through the motions.
Yeah. Ask Jesus to reveal himself to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, all the things that we've talked about, reading the accounts of the early church fathers and scriptural references and, you know, stories of the Eucharist, but he'll reveal himself to you.
Yeah. Just ask him.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he did for me in those 2 weeks is he really did reveal himself to me.
Yeah,
and he made me like fall in love with the Mass because I was always really fond of adoration and I loved being in his presence and adoration, but I was personally having a hard time translating that to Sunday Mass when I'm covered in children and everybody has to go to the bathroom and all the things.
And I think there's also just this foundation as well, that like you're his beloved and he is yours. Mm-hmm. And even with kids crawling all over you, like we, as a family, we spent numerous masses in the cry room, you know, but it was definitely still a very valid mass. And he was definitely still very present to me in the Eucharist.
And I think when you have little ones, you have to just find a way that works for you too. Like when Tessa was little, I had a really hard time listening in the mass in the church with her. Mm-hmm. And priests at the time would say, "We don't want kids to be outside of the church." And I was like, "Yeah, but you don't want her in the church. Trust me, she's very loud."
Yeah.
She's very loud. She doesn't know how to whisper. And she's just talking her little ear off. Right. But if I sat in the cry room, then she could jibber jabber.
Right.
And I could listen.
Yeah.
So do what works for you, not what you feel pressured by the people around you to be right. Like just go where you feel comfortable. But how about some more tangible things about like how we can enliven our mass experience? I think veiling has been, I don't veil all the time, mainly because I forget my veil. So if you see me with that one, that's why I don't have it on.
Just put one in your glove compartment.
I have them everywhere. And somehow I still don't always make it in the church with them.
Yeah.
Especially if I don't have my kids, cause I stick them in like the church bag for the kids. But if they're not there, forget it. I don't even know why I can't get myself to church with one, but I do love to veil. And I think that it does a couple of things for me. I think, it really focuses me in on why I'm there and who he is. Mm-hmm. And there's like that bride aspect of it of like, oh, you see me, I see you. It also kind of has a little bit of like a, blinder effect, like with horses.
Yes. Yeah.
Where you can't really see what's happening to the right and left of you. And so it's like
you're sheltered over under him.
Yes. There's like a shelter. I remember Maddie saying that, like when she puts it on, she feels like the rest of the church kind of gets blocked out.
Yeah.
And obviously you can see, but it just kind of covers your periphery a little bit.
Right.
And you just feel like more zoned in on what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think for some reason it just like changes my heart and the disposition of my heart when I'm wearing it of like, oh, I'm here. Mm-hmm. I'm here to see you, Lord. Mm-hmm. And it opens me up to experiencing him more.
Yeah. Another thing that I love to do is I drift off and daydream in mass. I think everybody does. It's like one of my common things to say at confession. But to reorientate myself, like, boom, get back at it. I like to just think about like, what are the angels doing in here right now?
Oh, that's cool.
You know?
Yeah.
And like you can read accounts from mystics that, it's been revealed to them, like the supernatural that's happening at mass. And it's just so powerful just thinking about the angels just bowing in worship right now and the open heaven above us. And
it's where heaven meets earth. Yeah. When my brother first passed away, we, for whatever reason, spent a year at St. William during that time. Mm-hmm. Eli was two. And I think it's because they had a nursery. And so we went there quite a bit and we felt like that's where God was calling us to. And when I would walk into St. William, it's this big, beautiful, ornate church with beautiful music. And when the amen is sung, it sounds like angels singing. Mm-hmm. It's just the most beautiful thing. And so I knew theologically that the mass is where heaven meets earth and that we're all interconnected in the mass, that everyone across the world is in one place at one time whenever we are celebrating the Eucharist together. And the same is true for all in heaven are all present. I'm not sure how deeply I understood that at the time.
Yeah.
But I kind of knew that it was there. But I felt so closely connected to my brother anytime I was, especially at St. William, other masses as well. But for some reason, that church just really felt like all the angels and saints in heaven. Mm-hmm. We're here with us in this moment and that we were getting to spend time together and celebrate together.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's
very cool. So there's so much. I mean, we could just go on and on about our deep love for Jesus in the Eucharist, but we want to invite you to deepen that, to deepen that relationship with him, to ask him when you're there, like, Lord, reveal yourself to me, show yourself to me, let me see more of you when I come to mass. And maybe even ask him, like, how can I deepen my mass experience? One thing you can do, I've heard many times, is during the offering, the offertory. That is actually a deep part of the liturgy. It's not just, you know, an in-between time or whatever.
Yeah, it's not halftime.
It's not halftime. They're placing the sacrifice on the altar, right? Mm-hmm. So think about like Old Testament time of coming before the altar with a lamb or with a bull or whatever was to be sacrificed in that moment. that is what is happening there. Yes, there's music playing, and yes, the you know, offering baskets are being passed around. But what really matters is that bringing up of the gifts.
Yeah.
And the prayers that the priest is praying quietly under his breath during that time to prepare the liturgy of the Eucharist. And so it's a really good time to kind of dig deep and offer something to the Lord mm-hmm. in your own heart too, of like, is there something I'm holding on to? Is there a fear I'm feeling? Is there a prayer request that I have? Is there a question that I have for the Lord? That can be a time where you really orient your heart towards yeah. what is about to happen and give your own personal sacrifice as they lay their sacrifices on the altar.
When I was going through my consecration to my guardian angel, that was one of the things that they talked about, and how your guardian angel would like to take that up for you.
Oh,
like
that's
you,
cool.
You give it to them and you ask them to take it to the altar for you.
Isn't yes.
that cool? And as you were talking, another thing that I love to do that I found myself just getting entranced by, and I don't even realize it. But during the offertory, watching the intricacy of setting the table, setting the altar, and then also at the end, after receiving the Eucharist, how much care is taken in cleaning the vessels that yes. once held him.
Yes, because every drop mm-hmm. is his entire, like it's like every tiny morsel is his whole right. body. Every tiny yeah. drop is yeah. is our king, right? So it's treated with such love and such care.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to go into the Exodus story. So maybe we can do that next time because we're a little bit running out of time. But one thing that I think is so neat is if you go back and read the Passover story, and the Passover feast that followed from that, uh-huh. that was then done every year, hundreds of years. This yeah. Passover feast was the high holy day of the year. It was like the holiest of holies, right? And have you ever done like the actual script of the Passover feast? Have you ever read it?
A Seder meal?
Yeah, like a Seder yeah. meal where you uh-huh. actually like read the readings that the kids would read and yeah. that the parents would read.
It's powerful.
It's powerful. And it's almost our mass.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's like they yeah. read the Psalms and so it's so cool to see the way that all of those Old Testament things and mm-hmm. the way the care with which it would have been taken during the Old Testament was yeah. then transformed into the new sacrifice
right.
of Jesus.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's very cool to the point where like, I don't know. I'll have to go and just like, it'll take me a while to explain this whole thing, but it's one of my favorite things to teach. Because I think most people don't understand where the Eucharist comes from in scripture,
right.
like where, and not just John 6, like John 6 was kind of like the culmination of it all. Right.
Yeah.
But it was all the way through the Old Testament. And on our next episode, we're talking about the lion and the lamb.
Yeah.
And the lamb obviously has a lot to do with this too.
Right.
So maybe I can throw some of it in there yeah. as we're talking about the lamb next time around. And I get a little nerdy when it comes to some of this stuff, but it's super fun.
It's so good.
And then once you understand how it all interplays, then it's like, how could I ever walk away
right.
from this? Why would I ever want to walk away? Like, this is the biggest gift that God yeah. could have given our church and our lives.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. He yeah. gave us himself.
If you want to dive into it, a great resource I would suggest is Scott Hahn's The Lamb's Supper.
Yes.
It just dives into the scriptural references and all the stories Megan's talking about.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing to dive through Lent.
Yeah. And then he also has another one called The Fourth Cup.
Yeah.
And so that is really heavily about like the Seder meal, the Passover mm-hmm. feast, and how Jesus did not take the fourth cup at mm-hmm. the Passover feast. He said he would not drink this again until he was with his Father in heaven, I believe is the scripture line. And then, the story goes that he received the fourth cup on the cross.
On the cross. Yeah.
And it's very cool.
Yeah.
And so when you do like a Passover feast with your kids, you don't drink the fourth cup.
And then
like
he said it is yeah. finished.
And it is finished. Yes.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. There's so much fun. I swear we could spend like weeks
yeah.
diving into all the tiny details.
But how amazingly rich is our faith?
Oh, like, it's so cool.
Oh my gosh. Megan, hold on. Yesterday, Megan, she was like, I've been watching these shows about cults. And she was telling me some of them. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad.
Oh, I know.
Our
but
faith
hey,
is so rich and true.
It's so
and
rich,
real.
But we sound a little crazy too.
Yes, we do.
We were talking to a friend the other day and she said that, they have friends who are not Catholic who came to visit their house and they walked up to look on the altar. I mean, on their,
mantle
of their house. And she was like, we got a woman's bone up there. We're a little weird, but that's okay.
But it's good.
Because ours also has good reason behind it. Yeah. And the Lord is in all of it. So yeah. Anyways,
that's so funny.
I was like, yep, that's us. We're Catholics. We just keep people's bones in our house. But it was like St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. It wasn't just like some lady.
Right. But take her house now, put it in the early church times, and it'd be totally normal.
Totally normal. You know? Yes.
Right. We're just living it out. 2,000 years later.
Yeah, we're still like the early church.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right, guys. Well, I hope that as these weeks go on and these days go on, that you draw closer to his heart, mm-hmm. that you get to know his deep love for you. You get to know more about his character, his immense, like all the different facets of who he is that we can never even nail down in just a few weeks. And I pray that every time you seek him in the Eucharist, these prayers come to your heart. Mm-hmm. The way you see him as the lion and the lamb and the good shepherd and the bridegroom, that those you see that in him in the Eucharist. I pray that you have deep encounters with him in the Eucharist, that you go and you sit at his feet and you just lay your cares down for him and let him pick them up for you. Mm-hmm. And I pray that not only do you seek his heart, but you receive his heart for you and the way that he's seeking you every time mm-hmm. you go to Mass and you go to adoration. And that if maybe you have time this week, you might want to add an extra daily Mass mm-hmm. or two in there, or an extra stop by an adoration chapel if you have that opportunity near you.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
Yeah. He'll honor that.
Oh, totally. He will. And if you have little ones, bring them with you.
Take them.
Take please. Them. Let them go say hi to Jesus. Even if you don't stay more than 3 minutes, it's worth it.
Yeah.
My kid is always the loudest one in the adoration chapel, but we run away real fast. So it's okay.
That's good.
All right. Bye guys.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today, friends. We are so excited to do this study with you, to hear about the way the Lord is speaking to you. And if you have the Lord moving in your heart, let us know. And make sure to join us tomorrow when the activation drops, and we'll see you soon.